What's going on? Welcome back to today's assignment. We're back in the classroom with Dr. Jim. Today's Wednesday, another pretty volatile day in the market. How are we holding up today, Dr. Jim?
Man, I'm doing well. So I just got to know. I mean, let's get it on record here. What are we looking? What are we thinking? We thinking Lakers in five?
On,
is that what we're thinking?
Dr. Jim, you don't even...
You're thinking Lakers in six?
That's not even what you're thinking, Dr. Jim, because...
Is it a five-game series or a seven-game series in the first round?
It might be a four-game series.
I don't even know, dude. I'm just saying, like, you think you're going to take the King down? Like, I don't think so, dude.
We did last year. You said the same thing last year. It almost feels like this was yesterday we had this conversation. It's another year.
Is it a seven-game series or a five-game series in the first round?
I think it's four.
Seriously,
seven. Seven.
It's seven? Okay.
Not that we'll need seven, but you know, you're not even a LeBron fan. You're just not even an anything fan. I'm just whatever Errol is on the opposite.
I'm a fade Errol Coleman fan. That's where I am. I've made a lot of money that way. Like, you just keep making me money.
Hey.
So I'm like, why would I not do this?
Hey, you know, I do like the thinking, but, you know, I think the Nuggets are still kind of healing my pain from the whole Broncos thing last year. And then my guy, Russell Wilson, he's kind of out of there now, but I think it was, I'm glad he got his payday, but it really wasn't working out too hot anyways. But the Dolphins sting a little bit. So I'm really hoping we win this championship because I just need something back after that Dolphins whooping last year. But volatility is expanding a little bit now, Dr. Jim, too. So I think we can get that, you know, I keep saying plus 20 VIX. I think we can get a 20 VIX. We were kind of there a little bit, then we hit a little bit of a rally, but just a crazy volatile market the past about 4 or 5 days, Dr. Jim.
Yeah, it's been pretty whippy, which is, I mean, this is kind of fun. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's fun to trade these kind of markets. Yeah. We haven't had this in a long time. I mean, I'm looking at it now. The VIX got up to, 1956, I guess, yesterday. Yeah. So we didn't quite hit the 20 mark. So we got a little ways to go to get there. But yeah, it's been a lot of back and forth. And, you know, I mean, you've got Middle East tensions. You've got, you know, interest rates higher for longer. You've got a lot of things that are in the mix. It just makes a lot of sense for the market to reprice lower. Now, how much lower is it going to be? You know, I heard somebody last night talking about, you know, when markets go down 5%, which we're like right on the cusp of that right now, when markets go down 5%, the likelihood that they continue that move to get somewhere within like the 8 to 10 or 8 to 12 region, it's very high. It's very high. And so, you know, again, nobody knows and there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. But I'll tell you what, man, if that did happen, like right now we've got ES at 5090, right? You've got NASDAQ at 17.7. I mean, if you start talking about the NASDAQ at like, you know, 16.7, 16.8, that's pretty interesting. You start talking about E-mini S&Ps at like 47.50. It's like, man, that would be a very, very different market than what we've had these first couple months.
No, a very different market. You think things are going to keep escalating a little bit in the Middle East? Not that we pay too much attention to that in our positions and things like that, but you think that'll keep shaking things up for a little bit or what?
No, I don't actually. No, I think it's all theater. I really don't think anything's going to come of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that I feel that way. I mean, obviously, I think a relatively peaceful situation is going to be the best outcome for most people. There's obviously a lot of things going on over there. There's a lot of things going on with like Russia, Ukraine, things like that. But I actually think the Iran-Israel situation, I'd be very surprised if it escalates too much more beyond where it is right now.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I mean, we could jump into the slides. We're talking a little bit about theta today, Dr. Jim. I recently learned, do you know what the symbol for theta represents? And anybody can correct me if I'm mistaken, but I believe I'm not mistaken. But do you know what it is?
I mean, I can visualize it in my mind, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it means other than, you know, the Greeks' interpretation.
No, yeah.
So no, please enlighten
me. No, I believe if I'm not mistaken, theta is a symbol for death or something along the lines. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not sure if they use that in the Greek world, but I recently learned this, and Julia and I were caught by surprise on this. Obviously, I don't think that's theta terms, but we were enlightened on that.
Interesting. Yeah, that sounds like
it was a little trivia to get into theta for today.
I mean, that sounds like, you know, you were reading off of some 11-year-old kid's Wikipedia page, and that's where you got that information from. So I don't know if I'm going to co-sign on that.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that you got Julia on your team makes me feel like it probably is the real deal. Yeah. But I don't know, man. I don't know how I feel about that.
Nah, Theta, not option terms. So I know a couple of weeks ago we were talking a little bit about Delta. And then last week we were talking a little bit about extrinsic value and intrinsic value. And then today we're going to talk a little bit about Theta. So in the rank of favorite child, where do you put Delta and Theta? Which one's more important, and which one do you pay attention to most before we hop into the first slide?
Yeah, definitely pay attention to Delta. I mean, the way you phrased the question is interesting because there's a couple different questions kind of underneath the layers there. I mean, Delta is definitely what I look at the most, but Theta is definitely what's going to ultimately be the most important.
Okay.
And I actually, I just got done shooting all the footage, man. It was a lot of work, but we finally just got done shooting all the footage for the next crash course, and it's going to be on option returns. So I'm very excited about that. Obviously, Theta plays a big part to that. Delta plays a big part to that. Well, one of the things that I talk about in the options crash course, just to give people a little bit of a sneak preview, is that on a day-to-day basis, the thing that's going to move your P&L the most almost every single day will be Delta. Mm-hmm. Delta and the Delta effects are always going to be much larger than like Theta effects or even Vega effects. Usually Delta, you know, stands alone in the spotlight when it comes to P&L movers day-to-day. However, over time, when you think about the cumulative nature of your positions, your portfolio, over a series of like, you know, weeks, months, quarters, et cetera, Theta is going to be the thing that's going to be the most reliable for you. Because again, Delta, I mean, we don't know where the market's going to go. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Right. And so it's like on a short-term basis, 45 days, like we have no idea. Like, yes, of course. I mean, is the market going to go higher over time? Yeah, probably. It always has. I would definitely put my chips in the middle on that happening again. But over the course of like, you know, a month or a month and a half or a couple of months, nobody knows. And so Theta is the most important because it's the most reliable, but Delta is the most important because it can move your P&L the most on a given day. So I think you kind of have to look at both.
Okay, I hear you. We'll jump into the first slide. It kind of sounds like you're ranking Theta slightly underneath Delta without seeing it. I don't know though, but.
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough. It's just like my children. It's like, you know, I mean, is Amelia my favorite? I mean, Amelia's obviously my favorite, but like number two, it's like Penelope and Eli. It's like, I don't know, man. It's pretty close.
You have three kids, right?
I have three. Yeah. But Amelia's my favorite. Like that's obviously true. But number two, it's close, dude. Like there's no slam dunk.
I hear you. I can't relate. But what is Theta? Option pricing. Theta is a critical component in pricing of options, and it reflects the amount by which the options value decreases with each passing day. Assuming other factors remain constant, traders factor Theta into their options trading strategies to understand how time decay will affect the probability of their positions. So just reading this right off the bat, Dr. Jim, Theta, it sounds like it can kind of help you gauge your expectations a little bit. What would you say about that?
Yeah, no, it absolutely does.
Why does that matter?
Does it matter?
Yeah, like why does it matter? Is it kind of like a risk management kind of thing? It helps you kind of observe, because I can look at my Theta number and it's like, okay, whether it's 20 or whether it's 40 or whether it's 50, does it change my feeling about the position at all? Like do you get what I'm saying by that?
I mean maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But to continue this conversation, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Do you think that there is a ceiling on how much Theta you should carry? In other words, could you make the statement and feel good about the statement that you could never have too much positive Theta?
Right off the bat, I mean, the more Theta, if I'm selling options, sounds good to me. That's what I'll go with. If I had to choose a position that had more or less Theta, I would choose more. Or even my options or my portfolio theta, I would choose more. Is there risks on having too much Theta?
That's the question.
I mean, it depends how the trade goes for you.
Well, it's not even the trade, but just think about your whole portfolio, right? Like think about your portfolio Theta numbers, 20, 40, 50, you know, 9, whatever they might be.
Right.
Right. Is there a ceiling to how high that number can be?
I've never ran into that issue. I would say no right off the bat. I'm trying to see where you're going with it, though.
Well, I think go back to, you know, kind of the question that you threw out there just a minute ago. That is the question. Is there too much risk in having, or is there more risk in having too much theta?
Yeah.
The reason why I wanted to get your take on that question, why I wanted to throw that out there, is because, I mean, everything you write here is correct. I mean, everything in terms of like expectations and thinking about, you know, how valuable each day is from a time decay standpoint, all those things, right? But I think something that kind of, it trips people up, like it stops people in their tracks, kind of similar to, you know, the experience you're having right now, where it's like, wait a minute, I don't know. I actually don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, when I think about time decay, it's like, that sounds really good. So I think I want more, you know, relative to less. But then you're like, well, wait a minute. Is there a lot of extra risk in having more? Well, the answer to that question is yes, there is.
Okay.
And so this is why I wanted to bring this up, because I think it's an interesting topic. And it's very related to what we're talking about here. You know, when you think about theta, right? How are you going to build up significant amounts of theta in your portfolio? What types of strategies are you going to use to be able to do that?
Option selling strategies.
Okay. And even more specifically, what types of option selling strategies?
Are you leaning towards undefined risk versus defined risk?
Yes. So of those two, do they accumulate theta equally?
No, they don't. You'd collect a little bit more on an undefined risk.
A little bit more. No. You collect a lot more. Right. You collect significantly more on an undefined risk strategy. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, if we're talking about like super wide iron condors, like, yeah, you're going to get a lot of theta for that. But I'm talking about like a standard plain vanilla run of the mill, you know, vertical spread iron condor, you know, et cetera, relative to a strangle or like a short put or something like that. It's going to be multiples, many multiples of the theta that you collect with undefined risk. Okay. What a lot of traders realize is to get to the certain level of theta that they're targeting, whether it be, you know, 0.2% of net leg or 0.3% of net leg or whatever, they need to utilize undefined risk strategies to get there. Okay. The next step is, if they run this thought experiment through their minds, they're like, wait a minute, I've got 40 theta in my portfolio. Let's just say, just picking a number at random. Mm-hmm. What if I want to take that up to 60? How would I get there? Well, you ain't getting there with vertical spreads, and you ain't getting there with iron condors, right? To get there, you're going to have to do what? Put more undefined risk units out there. And so again, you can kind of see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
If you want to keep pushing the envelope on theta higher and higher and higher, you have to be aware that that's going to require more short unit exposure in the marketplace to be able to get there. And so that's why positive theta is a good thing. It's a great thing. I mean, it's kind of what you've summarized nicely for us here in this discussion. But you have to be aware that there is a cap, there is a ceiling where you can absolutely have too much.
So you're saying sell, if I'm able to sell some undefined risk strategies and some cheaper underlyings. I know it's all give or take, but does that kind of put defined risk strategies a little bit out of a disadvantage? Are they as worth it?
Well, I mean, it's gimmies and gotchas, man. It's always gimmies and gotchas. No, really, for real. It really is.
I know.
Because, I mean, are they worth it? I mean, yeah, they're worth it if you're just starting out, if you like knowing that you have a safety net, if you're unfamiliar with a given strategy, right? If you really want to, you know, control the sizing of your positions and, you know, prevent at all costs, you know, against big outlier moves, like, yeah, they're incredibly worth it for all those reasons. Mm-hmm. But I still think that over time, for most traders, they should be trying to graduate to a spot where they're doing mostly undefined risk strategies.
Yeah.
With maybe some defined risk here and there, just to kind of balance things out and, you know, play around with new strategies, whatever. But again, and I know we've talked about this before on the show, but I think maybe it's been a minute. In all the conversations that I've had with traders over the years, I mean, it's thousands, it's tens of thousands at this point. The one common denominator across all the ones that have been able to sustain a certain level of success over time has been they all focus on undefined risk strategies mostly. Some of them are bullish, some of them are bearish, some of them are neutral. Like, that is all over the board. But they all have one common denominator. It's undefined risk. And that's no surprise. Mm. It's because of the unfiltered exposure to theta and vega easier to adjust. I mean, there's so many reasons why.
As we jump to this next slide, have you noticed at all more undefined risk traders take off their positions sooner than traders that are using defined risk strategies? That's kind of a nuanced question, but I wonder if you've ever observed that. I just think if certain trades might work out a little quicker with undefined risk, you're maybe able to take on a little bit more credit. Maybe you get a little bit more profit sooner in an undefined risk strategy just because you're taking in more credit on a trade. I just wonder if you ever noticed undefined risk traders to take off their positions sooner than traders that typically trade defined risk.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah. I haven't noticed it necessarily, but I will say this. I don't know of any defined risk traders or strategies that really give you the opportunity to take it off early, quite like an undefined risk strategy.
Yeah, that's kind
of just
lit.
because of the nature of the strategy, right? Like you can't, because you have the shorts and the longs kind of competing against each other. And they're kind of, you know, introducing all this friction into the strategy that you have to carry over time for it to get wherever you're trying to go.
Yeah.
But with an undefined risk strategy, you don't have that. So you're always going to have that option.
No, I hear you. I hear you. And I mean, as we jump to this last slide, I just have a few kind of bullet points laid out for theta, time decay. We already kind of touched on all of these, but theta represents the rate of decay in an options value as time passes. And because it represents it, I feel it can kind of help you gauge expectations a little bit with your positions and what you can kind of expect. And then daily erosion, kind of the same thing. It measures how much an option price decreases with the passage of one day, assuming all other factors remain constant, because we know there are other components that are dynamic in the market. And then nonlinear decay, the theta is not linear. It accelerates as the expiration date approaches, especially for options nearing expiration. And then we got a little bit of gamma risk that could come into play, but we'll talk about gamma another time. And then intrinsic value versus extrinsic value. Theta primarily affects extrinsic value of an option, which is a portion of its price not attributable to intrinsic value. And we touched on extrinsic value and intrinsic value last week. And we learned that there are two components that make up the value of an option, intrinsic value and extrinsic value. And then we learned there's a couple components that make up the value of intrinsic value, and the two main components being time and volatility, and then theta representing time in this case. And that builds the case as to why theta primarily affects the intrinsic value portion of an option, because it's one of the components of it. But these are the four bullet points I kind of have laid out just to kind of get an idea on what theta is and kind of how we observe theta. But anything to add on this one, Dr. June?
Man, well, a couple of things.
It's pretty repetitive. Yeah.
No, it's not. It's actually not repetitive at all. These are all very unique aspects of theta, especially number three. So number three is so important. And I think that this is something that a lot of option buyers don't realize until they buy an option and they realize that they're just getting chewed to pieces.
Oh, right.
Like this is one of those things where it doesn't matter how much I tell you, or you tell someone, or somebody reads it in a book or watches it on a YouTube video, like they have to experience it themselves. Mm-hmm. When you buy an option, right? Not only do you have to get the directional move correct to make money, but you have to do it very, very quickly, because even though you might have, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 days to go, whatever, each day that you're wrong, it's going to increase the height of the hurdle that you have to jump over to make money on the trade. And so that's something that surprises a lot of option buyers. Like, they think they have all the time in the world. They kind of don't.
Yeah.
Because if they don't get the move that they want within a reasonable amount of time, then the extrinsic value, it's just bleeding off of that option. And of course, that's what we try to take advantage of as, you know, option sellers. But the nonlinear decay, you know, you have a certain hurdle that you have to jump over as an option buyer. Well, that hurdle is very slowly getting higher and higher over time. And that acceleration of the size of the height, it is speeding up as you get closer to expiration, which is what you're saying here, which is why, you know, a lot of option buyers like to buy, you know, really far out of the money, or I'm sorry, really far in duration options, you know, 180 days or like 360 days or whatever, because it slows down the decay, which actually I don't mind that strategy. You know, the tricky part there, the gotcha, if you will, is those options cost a lot of money. Like, you have to put up a significant debit, a significant amount of buying power to hold that option. And so the nonlinearity of theta, I think, surprises people a lot of times.
Yeah. And it's a good point how you kind of brought up the option buying. I think that's kind of the first taste, because it is really natural, especially for younger individuals, to start buying options first. you do get that quick taste, and you know, you notice that the value of those options really decline at a faster rate once they get closer to that expiration date. But that's another good point. It's tough. You have to have two things that are right. You have to time it correctly, and then you also have to get the directional assumption correct. So it's two things you're kind of fighting against.
That's right. And a lot of option buyers, they forget about that. They forget about the timing aspect of it.
Yeah.
They kind of feel like they just have to get the directional move right. And that's not right. There's another piece to the puzzle.
No, most definitely. Here, I kind of want to just give you a quick update, Dr. Jim, what's going on in here. There you go. Can you see that okay?
Oh, yeah. Look, you got some NVIDIA down 28 today.
I do. So, Dr. Jim, NVIDIA was one of those ones that got out of hand so quickly. I think this one had me at a max loss like the first 48 hours of putting this one on. And I've had it on for 55 days. It now expires in 2 days. My break even is 821. And we came so close. Or we're still coming so close. You know, we got a couple of days left. I need this around 821. That dashed line down there is where my break even is at. So you can just see how close we are. It's one of those ones where it's like, this position can't get any worse, but I could get bailed out if it wants to keep selling off. Yet last week, we got so close. We touched a low of 829, and then we put in two consecutive days right after that. And then now we're selling back off. But I need this around 821 by Friday. Been having that one on for 2 months. So that's what's going on in NVIDIA. CRM is one I put on 2 days ago. It was a skewed iron condor to the upside. It had a pretty big gap down in a continued sell-off. So when we were down here, I decided to put on a little bit of positive delta. And then I sold the other side, the call side, so I can collect a little bit more credit as I do that. And then also because I was looking at this position and I felt comfortable with it. Number one, because earnings is sitting outside of the duration that I'm trading. So I felt comfortable doing that. And then on top of that, selling the other side, I was able to collect more credit. And then on top of that, selling the other side was out of the expected move. So another reason why I didn't mind selling an iron condor and CRM. SPY, this is one that expires in 2 days. It's a little shorter time trade, I guess you could say. I sold the 495 puts. So hopefully by tomorrow, we get a little bit of a bounce, maybe a little bit of a gap up. I don't know. Or
Wait. Hold on. You sold the 500 puts, it looks like, not the 495.
I'm sorry. I sold the 500. Sorry.
Yeah. You sold you got 500, 495 puts. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
My fault. Yeah. Sold the 500s, bought the 495s. This has been another volatile one, but hopefully we can get a little bit of a rally, maybe a gap up. Something like that would be nice within the next couple of days. Obviously, it's getting close to expiration, so it can be really volatile in terms of P&L on this one. But we ended up shorting this 500 contract for 292, then obviously bought the 495s. But we'll see how that one goes. We're kind of rallying back up a little bit here towards the end of the day. Or, I'm sorry, selling back off because these are the puts. But sometimes I like to look at the actual price action of the option itself. Sometimes it's kind of cool. It gives you kind of a visual of where that specific option contract is kind of sitting. It's kind of cool to look at sometimes. But that's SPY. And then Tesla, this is another one I've had on for about 14 days, so about 2 weeks now. I sold the 165 puts on Tesla. This is when I saw Tom and Victor talking about on one of the segments, and that kind of brought my attention to it. I know I could potentially be sitting in this through earnings. We have earnings after the April 23rd. I was hoping that I'd be able to be out of this by the time earnings comes, but if not, I'm gonna have a decision to make. I could either cut it or I could sit through the volatility when earnings comes, but this is all I pretty much got in the portfolio. A quick little update for you, Dr. Jim.
No, it's looking good. I mean, you've got NVIDIA, you know, you need NVIDIA down, and then you've got SPY, you need SPY up. And so that's an interesting little situation you find. Yeah, you know.
I know.
And they both expire Friday, so you know, I mean, it's unlikely that you cash both of them in, but it would be interesting to see kind of how that shakes out. I mean, NVIDIA is continuing to drop. I mean, the whole market's continuing to drop right now. It's actually, it's down pretty. Yeah, I mean, we're down 30 on ES now. So
I know if SPY could close by the end of the week above 500, this position would make about $314. if NVIDIA doesn't get below 821, this position will be out a little bit too. So maybe I could recover a little bit on SPY. I don't know. We'll see how this works out. It is interesting. I need NVIDIA down. I need SPY up. So we'll see what happens. That's all I got for you.
Yeah, now. And then we have, I think Netflix earnings are tomorrow night after the bell. So that could be a real mover for the whole NASDAQ.
I'm just going to be watching Netflix. I'm not sure what your thoughts on Netflix and what you've been looking at, what you guys are doing over there.
I don't know. I have no idea what I'm going to do. I'll probably figure it out tomorrow on From Theory to Practice. So a quick little plug for From Theory to Practice tomorrow. But yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just know that, I mean, all the heavy hitters are coming now. Netflix, Google, Meta, Apple, they're all coming in the next week or two. So yeah.
I was looking through the watch list, and earlier today, somebody on stream was even talking, man, every underlying I pull up right now is earnings is in the way. So I, you know, hopefully something shakes up the market. I don't mind. It's making things a little more interesting, but that's theta for today. So we went over delta, intrinsic value, extrinsic value. We got theta today. But anything to add before we hop on out of here, Dr. Jim?
No, I mean, I think really good discussion today. And I think the most important takeaway that we're both in agreement on is it's Lakers in five.
Oh my goodness. You don't even believe that though, Dr. Jim.
It doesn't matter what I believe.
You don't even believe
it
that.
It doesn't matter what I believe. We're just talking about objective truth at this point. It's Lakers in five, maybe six. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking at.
Okay. That surprises me a little bit, but not really. But no, we'll see what happens. I'm excited. My Liverpool, do you watch the Premier League at all? Any no. soccer? Not really.
Come on, dude.
Oh, you're missing out. Oh my goodness. You're missing out. You don't even know, but I won't touch on that. That's going to do it for today's stream. Thanks for hanging out with us, Dr. Jim. We always appreciate you having you in the teacher seat. Thanks for hanging out with us, and we'll catch you guys next time. Peace.
Peace.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.